The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Well, to receive Medicaid now in Kentucky, if you're able, you're going to have to work for it.
Oh, my gosh. Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
I'm not sick enough. I can work. And they're forcing me to work for Medicaid? Yes. Kentucky now is the first state to require that all able-bodied Medicaid recipients are going to have to work to keep their benefits. Opponents of helping people help themselves are getting ready to sue now. The Republican governor, Matt Bevin, received federal permission last week to implement the work requirement. Now, other states have tried this before. They tried to get permission from the Obama administration, but were denied. So, the cruel, heartless Republicans are at it again. So what does it entail? Well, starting this July, if you're not disabled, if you're able to work, you have to work a minimum of 20 hours to receive Medicaid coverage. The work requirement is broad. It could be volunteer work. It could be job training. It could be taking classes, caring for the disabled, even searching for a job. There are also exemptions for the requirement. People with medical conditions, full-time students, et cetera, et cetera. Governor Bevin said that of the 350 Kentuckians that are receiving Medicaid, they're already working. People will also have to earn dental and vision benefits through things like working toward a GED or taking a financial planning course. Oh, my gosh. What? You have to better yourself in some way or another? You have to volunteer your time and help other people just so you can get free help? What kind of monsters are we? It will soon become the standard and the norm in the United States of America, said Governor Bevin, and America will be better for it. Amen. Critics are already pouncing, saying this plan will seriously harm people and that it violates Medicaid law. So what, they would prefer people stay unemployed and on government assistance? You'd prefer people to not have a reason to live? I mean, if you were so sick you can't work, I get it, and we're here for you. But if you can work, yeah, I'm sorry. Get your ass up and volunteer at least. Another politician had something to say about that. We must make national principle that we will not tolerate a large army of unemployed. That we will arrange our national economy to end our present unemployment as soon as we can and then take the wise measures against its return. I do not want to think that this is the destiny of America, to remain permanently on relief rolls. Jeez. What a jerk. Was that Reagan? That was Reagan, wasn't it? Was that Trump or Reagan? Oh, no, it was FDR, the hero of the left. Apparently not even the godfather of American nanny state himself wanted people to be permanently on government relief. Look how far we have fallen. Why do Americans seem to value the best ideas in all areas of life except for the government? Maybe because in politics we're too concerned with who gets the credit and who has control. Matt Bevin, Kentucky, good for you. We'll be seeing and watching this experiment to see if it works.
Okay. It's Wednesday, January 17th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So the president had a series of tests done on him yesterday. And his doctor said he is as strong as an ox. Now, this is not the crazy. Remember that doctor that he had on that was like, I think you're a movie doctor. You're like the doctor. What's his face from Back to the Future? I would like a real doctor, please.
Oh, yeah. This is during the campaign, you mean?
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, he's super mega healthy. And you're like, wait, yeah. Mega? Did you use the word mega as a physician? It was that type of thing?
Yeah, I know you were in Columbia, but he just looked crazy. So,
and then they talked to him and he didn't like really examine him and he was using strange words. He was using Trump words. It looked like Trump gave him the script to write.
Yeah.
And no one, I don't think, really believed he wasn't healthy. But there was speculation in the media for sure that
I wanted the doctor questions, not because I didn't think Trump was healthy. I just thought he was nuts.
Right. You know what I
mean? So yesterday, the president's results, his test results were released to the press. And first, let's talk about his physical health. Here's what his doctor said.
Explain to me how a guy who eats McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken and all those Diet Cokes and who never exercises is in as good a shape as you say he's in.
It's called genetics. I don't know. It's some people have, just great genes. You know, I told the president that if he had a healthier diet over the last 20 years, he might live to be 200 years old. I don't know. I mean, he has incredible genes, I just assume. I mean, you know, if I didn't watch what I ate, I wouldn't have in the cardiac and overall health that he has.
So he is in good physical health, and you got to believe that Donald Trump loves the gene talk.
Oh, yeah, this is his game. Yeah.
He's big on that. Yeah, he's big on the racehorse theory that, you know, hey, we breed racehorses, you know, kind of a 1910, progressive eugenics kind of thing. He is all in, and so is the whole family.
I love the how can a guy eat McDonald's and be healthy? Almost everyone in America eats McDonald's at times. You can be healthy. It's funny, the same people that are like, well, yes, I put butter in my coffee, but how can this man eat McDonald's? Well, of course, 9 stacks of avocado toast are completely fine along with coconut butter, but how dare he have a piece of chicken?
And who doesn't understand the genetics thing, that there are people that can smoke, drink, and eat sticks of butter and live to 120?
Is it a good idea? Does it hurt your percentage chance to live longer? Yes, that does not mean that eating these things, especially if you eat them without a ridiculous amount, that doesn't mean that you're going to be unhealthy at all. You can, and then the diet, they have to throw, how could he have all these Diet Cokes? I don't know. Maybe him eating zero calorie beverages is the reason he can have McDonald's. Is that possible? Brainiac? I hate that stuff. But he did pass the test and did pretty well. I think you could look at him and say, wow,
I would hope that I would be as healthy as he is.
Yeah.
When I'm his age.
Or now.
Or now. I would take it now. I'd take it 5 years ago.
You're retroactively trying to match a 73-year-old's health. That's good.
I don't have the genetic predisposition to long life.
That's not good.
No.
The other thing was, by the way, we also found out today, apparently, Sanjay Gupta, who is a, you might think of him as a TV doctor, but they wanted him to be, you know, a high role in I can't remember, was it Attorney General?
Surgeon General.
Yeah,
I think it was Surgeon General.
For the Obama administration. Yeah. He was their first choice, and he didn't want him turning it down. Apparently was saying, if you look at the numbers, the guy's got heart disease. Just like, wait a minute, his doctor didn't say he had heart disease, but Sanjay, looking at the numbers, has been able to take the code and suck out heart disease from these numbers, apparently. So we'll get more on that as that develops.
How old is he? 72? 72,
73, something like that.
73?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're 73, you know, and you're living like Donald Trump, you know, I think you're kind of like a little heart disease isn't bad for me.
I think,
I mean, I'm 70, 73, 75 years old. I'm thinking, I've only got a little heart disease.
That's pretty good.
I'm good.
Exactly. I mean, you think the guy has been able to do whatever he wants for how many years? He owns a lot of the best restaurants in America. I mean,
he never exercises.
Doesn't exercise.
He's my hero. never exercises. He eats whatever he wants. And he's 4 pounds heavier than he was a year ago.
Yeah.
God bless him.
Especially going into that job. I mean, I would put on 60 in a week.
We would have to have suit makers on constant standby.
You just at some point, you just start building them with like release flaps.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can just expand
just
the
staple
size.
Staple the sides together because you're going to need the extra material later.
Make it for someone who weighs 600 and I'll grow into it.
That's right.
I promise.
That's right.
But the other big thing about this was people wanted him to take a cognitive test.
Yes.
You know, to test his brain, because everyone thinks in the media, apparently, that he just is mentally unfit to be president. Now, mentally unfit to be president is completely different than I don't like his policies. I don't like his character. I don't like his demeanor. Like, those are all things that the media obviously doesn't like, but it's completely different than whether he is mentally capable of thinking, you know, thinking in a normal human way.
I think there are times that he's mentally lazy, intentionally. He just hasn't thought things through. He just hasn't. It's just, you know, I think he has changed from the personality that if you go back and look at the videotapes in the 1980s and 90s. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's a decline in his mental health. I think that's just I haven't thought about it in a while. And I'm 73 years old.
Right.
I'm a little lazy on that.
But none of that stuff would be able to detect in a mental test. So he took a mental test for the first time ever, apparently. No president has ever had to take one of these tests before. And it wasn't because the doctor was like, well, I'm unsure of this guy. Apparently Trump wanted it done so he could prove that he was okay.
Well, we have people around you going, I don't know, the 25th Amendment, we could get him out of here. I'm taking a mental test.
Yeah, why not? Let's prove that, you know, and that's obviously a ridiculous media narrative, right?
Yes.
You know, the idea that he is incapable of thinking like a normal human being is completely absurd, right? We do have the test an example of the test.
Yeah, so we thought, because, you know, when you're given a mental test, I don't know, president passed it. Could you pass it? We'll give you the mental test they gave the president in a minute. So I don't know if you saw this a couple of weeks ago, but researchers found a kind of a big flaw in security with just chips that say Intel on them. So those aren't, those aren't bum, bum, bum. Those are not in almost every computer and cell phone. In fact, I think they're in all computer and cell phones. Hackers, they found, can use this go in through a backdoor and steal the data stored in memory. Now, that includes passwords and files. You know, they've come out. We got a patch. We got a patch for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a lot of people who use the nicotine patch, too, and it doesn't really work for them. But good luck with that. The patch is supposed to help somewhat, but it's not going to help everything. 1 in 4 people have already experienced identity theft, and you're going to. I mean, it's only a matter of time. If you're only monitoring your credit, your identity can be stolen in ways you can't detect. Thieves sell your information on the dark web. They get an online payday loan in your name. A wide range of identity threats, and you don't really know of them. And if there is a problem, LifeLock is going to work to restore it. They have restoration specialists here in America that, actually speak English and can help you fix it. That's the biggest problem. Okay, somebody stole your identity. Okay, now what? Now, nobody can, you know, protect the identity theft from all, you know, break-ins or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can uncover the threats that you might miss. So join now. Get 10% off of the promo code Beck. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or go to LifeLock.com and use the promo code Beck. That's Beck. Save 10% now at LifeLock.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So the president passed his mental agility test, and they can't use the 25th Amendment against him because he's passed a sanity test or a mental agility test. I will tell you, I have had these tests before. I've had it at Columbia, and I had it at the Mayo Clinic, because for a while I was testing like I had severe concussions, and they couldn't figure out what was going on, and we were afraid that maybe I was going into early Alzheimer's or something, and so I had these tests, and they're kind of spooky in a way. I mean, they're tough. You know, Stu won't let me see the paper now, so I'm a little nervous about.
Call me doctor, please.
Okay. Well, no, I'm the doctor.
Call me Dr. Stu.
Okay.
For today.
Okay, Dr. Stu.
Because you're right. I won't let you see it in advance. Obviously, yeah. that would not give us the results we're looking for. Yeah, I will say this. Looking at this test, it is not a test of, let's do a deep dive and search to see if there's anything wrong with your thought process. It's more of a test that you would give someone if you highly suspect they have dementia or they just had a stroke and you want to be able to check whether they're able to complete basic human thought, right? Like this, it's not a type of test that, you know, you're going to read into and be like, oh my gosh, you know, it doesn't say.
Do you have the whole test? Because the whole test, at least the one I took at least an hour.
Yeah, this is one page. We can do it quickly.
Okay.
It's a basic test, though. Like, if you know, your uncle has a stroke, they're at the hospital. Is there major problems with his brain?
All right, okay.
Here's a cognitive test. You go through it quickly. This shows you can do basic processes.
Okay.
You want to start here? Do you have a pen over there?
Yeah, yes,
I do. We'll start with the first part. The first part is there's three visual tests that won't work particularly well on radio, but we'll explain them. There is a bunch of numbers and letters for the first test, and it gives you the beginning of a path. For example, the number one, there's a line drawn to A. Then there's a line drawn to two. You know, you have to complete the pattern.
And then a line drawn to B, I would imagine.
Oh, that's a good, yeah. Why don't I just give you the answers?
Oh, okay, one, two.
Okay, so Jack, he's going down to B. Then B would go to three.
And then that would go to C.
Three to C.
And then it would go to four. And then it would go to D. And then it would go to five. And then it would go to E.
Okay, let me see.
This is not a real.
The next one, it is. This is the test. It's a Montreal cognitive test. Okay, now there's another one that says for Glenn to draw, copy a box.
This is not. This is not an invasive test.
What it is the Montreal cognitive assessment.
Uh-huh.
Which is the exact thing he took. I mean, you can rush through all you want. I don't know if you're trying to prove something.
No, it's just easy.
Okay, Glenn, it's easy for Glenn. Okay. All right. Now we have his, so there's three tests here, and we'll be posting the results here online. How much time do we have, Sarah? Should we go through the next couple of questions?
Okay. Did I get those right, doctor?
I will grade you at the end.
Okay, all right.
Thank you for calling me doctor. Here's the next thing. I want you to look at these pictures.
I will tell you that I didn't even read the directions. They're so easy. If I have any wrong, it's because I didn't read the directions.
Wow, President Trump was able to actually read the directions and get the questions
right. I'll read the directions.
Okay, I'm going to show you a picture. Really, I would like you to tell me what that picture is.
Okay.
What is that?
That's a lion.
A lion is the answer. We can write that down. We can get that to my physician's assistant. The first answer was a lion. Next one, what is the... I'm showing you a picture. What is this picture?
That is a rhino.
A rhino.
A rhino.
Rhino. And finally, I'm showing you this picture.
That
is
a ostrich, a zebra, a camel. This is not
okay. Lion, just writing down your answers. Rhino,
yeah,
and a camel. Yeah, okay, next up, are you ready?
I'm ready.
I am going to read a list of words.
Oh boy,
you must repeat them. Okay.
Do I have to wait for a while and then repeat them, or I just repeat the word you just said?
I'm going to read all five words. You're going to repeat them in that order.
All right.
Are you ready?
Okay, yes.
Face, velvet, church, daisy, red.
Faith, velvet, daisy, church. I'm bad at these.
Okay, we're going to try one more time. Here is the five words. Repeat them in this order.
Mm-hmm.
Face, velvet, church, daisy, red.
Face, velvet, daisy, a church, daisy. I can't remember.
Okay. If the premiere is listening, we're going to need a new host.
You're gonna need going a new to host.
Need a new host.
I am. This is. I mean, I was. I've gone through more difficult tests than this.
Mm-hmm.
I have a difficult time with some of them. Mm-hmm. I have a difficult time with some of them.
We are learning things.
Yes,
so
we,
far we've yes, learned many we things in my studies of your tests so far.
When
I've learned many
you see
things.
The lion is actually a chicken, you'll see how troubled we really are. Back in just a second.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Now I'm under a great deal of stress now.
Welcome to the Dr. Stu Program, 1-800-DRISTU.
It's not enough numbers.
We're giving Glenn the cognitive test that the president passed with flying colors yesterday.
Yeah.
And we're learning some interesting things as we go through this.
Well, now he's telling me that like there's certain grades for like how well the clock is drawn and stuff. I made a clock face quickly and just.
Okay. That's
okay. Here's a picture of a more detailed clock. Here's a grandfather clock. Does that help?
There's an interesting section in the instructions about people who make excuses for their incorrect answers that we can get into a little bit later.
All right. Okay.
We are now in the next section.
Next section.
And here is the. This is the.
By the way, the president passed this with flying colors.
Flying colors.
I'm still in jeopardy here.
I'm going to read you a list of digits.
Digits.
You need to repeat them in forward order. Okay. Two.
Wait, what do you mean in forward order? The way
normal
you just
order.
Gave it.
Yeah, the way I'm going to give them to you.
All right.
Two.
Two.
No.
All right.
When I'm done with all five of them.
Okay. Okay.
You will then repeat the five.
All right.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Two.
Somebody write these down. Two.
No, you can't write them down. You need to just say.
All right. Go ahead.
Two.
Two. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I got the first
number. I am about to subtract some points.
All right, okay.
Listen to the five numbers.
Yes.
2-1-8-5-4.
2-1-8-5-4. But I would like to say that it is 5-2-1-8-5-4. Because you said 5 several times before.
I did say
you
that.
You said 5.
I said 2 many times,
right.
Because you kept interrupting me.
And 2-2-2. Okay. 5-5-5. Okay. It's actually 5-2. 5-2-5-2.
Sir, we can remove you from office if you want to be silly.
All right, okay, go ahead.
Okay, there's a silliness clause
all right. Okay.
In this test.
All right, okay.
I would like you to repeat these numbers in backward order.
In backward
Put order. Your pen down, sir.
All right, I'm just finishing
put your
the clock face.
Put
that
your pen down. You've already failed the clock. Well, we'll see how you did on the clock.
All right.
Repeat these in backward order.
Backward order.
7.
Sorry.
7-4-2. There are three numbers I just gave you.
2-4-7.
That is correct. We'll be getting the full test results here in just a moment.
Yeah. See, this is not like a real test. Is this really the one they gave the president?
This is the Montreal Cognitive Assessment. Okay. And yes, this is
I will tell you, I've had this before, and here's how they usually go. I'm going to give you five numbers. Okay. Let me give them to you here, Stu. Let's see if I can do these. Do this with you.
He is stalling to get out of it. Yes,
no.
I'm getting that from my physician's assistant here in the other room.
7, mm-hmm. 14, mm-hmm. 21, mm-hmm. 8, 3. Sam.
Wait, what? You didn't tell me what we were doing.
I'm saying I'm going to give you five numbers. You repeat them
okay,
back.
Go ahead.
Okay. 7, 14, mm-hmm. 21, 8, 3.
7, 14, 21, 8, 3.
Okay, well, it's easy because of the multiple. Anyway.
So the test designer has a problem? Is that the issue
he's
here?
He's a little insane. Okay, hang on. I'm going to give you some more.
Are you trying to delay so we'll get to the end of the test?
No. Five numbers. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
5-3-17-40-9.
5-3-17-40-9.
Give me the first five numbers that I gave you.
7-14-21-8-3.
Okay. So the real tests, they keep doing this. They just keep adding five numbers,
difficult.
And they'll give you five numbers, five numbers, five numbers, five numbers. What were the first five numbers?
That would be,
and you're like,
oh, impossible.
I don't know. What?
And again, that is an interesting distinction here between the tests. The one you're talking about is, let's do an incredibly deep dive to see if we can find any hint of anything that's at the very beginning stages. What this is you just had a massive stroke. Can you do the basics?
So this is
that's what the president passed.
Like you just in this test, they had the president draw a three-dimensional box. Okay. In the test that I have seen, they'll show you something like this.
Where you're seeing like a rectangle, circle, square.
Like a little antenna thing coming off the end. And then it comes up and it juts out. And they don't make any sense. And they show it to you for like 5 or 10 seconds. Say, remember this. They put it away. Now draw it.
Right.
And you have to draw it. I mean, and there's because it's very intricate and there's no rhyme or reason to why it's built that way.
And Sarah, you would say this is a delay to try to get so we can't get to the end of the test? Is that accurate?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. All right. Okay, I would like you to clap your hands. Okay, thank you. Now, okay, there you go. Now, I'm going to read a list of letters.
Please didn't say stop clapping.
Please stop clapping your hands.
Right.
Now, every time I say the letter A, I would like you to clap.
Okay,
that's it.
That had an A in it.
No.
Is that,
no. I'm going to give you a list of letters.
Right.
When I say
A.
The letter A,
got it.
You should clap. Ready?
Got it.
F,
flap-headed A.
B, A, C, M,
go ahead.
N,
N,
A, J,
J,
K.
No, these. I mean,
L,
is this the letter
B,
or?
A,
yeah.
F,
because they sound
A,
like.
K,
yeah.
D,
D,
E,
E,
A,
uh-huh.
A,
uh-huh.
A,
uh-huh.
J,
uh-huh.
A,
uh-huh.
M. This is harder than you thought, right?
Okay. Yeah, okay.
All right.
Well, because the K and the J, you know, if it's not the letter, it does have J-A-Y, so it has an A in it, I'm just saying.
Now, the next question, you specifically warned me not to give you any math questions.
Yeah, I'm
which is
I'm
not
bad
something
at math.
You can ask the doctor. You can't say,
anything
but blood
ask,
tests.
I
you can't
didn't
do
ask
that.
Ask the doctor to not...
I'm going to give you a number.
A number.
I would like you to subtract 7 from that number.
7.
Okay.
14.
I haven't started yet.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
The number is
21.
No, I haven't started yet, so you can't.
7?
No.
7, 6,
okay.
5, 4, 3,
I think,
2, 1.
I think we
it
locked
is
you off
0.
After this.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Okay, here we go. 100.
Yeah. 100.
Subtract 7.
93.
Subtract 7 from that.
It's would be 93, 92, 91.
You can use your fingers.
Can you really?
It doesn't say you can't.
Oh, 93, 92, 91, 90, 98. No, that wouldn't be right. 89.
See,
88.
The best thing is, and then
80,
now this
80,
isn't
87,
in the
87, which would be wrong.
Mm-hmm. See, in the test materials, there's no point where it recommends the doctor harass the patient to try to pressure him into incorrect answers, but that is what I'm doing.
71.
Okay, none of that's... All right, I'm going to say... I'm putting, we're going to move on. Repeat the sentence.
12.
I only know that John is the one to help today.
I only know that John is the one to help today, but the trick is repeat this sentence because that's what you just said. So it's a trick question.
Oh, okay. Here's another one I'm going to give you, and I would like you to repeat it. Here it goes. The cat always hid under the couch when dogs were in the room.
Here goes. The cat always hid under the couch when dogs were in the room.
Okay. Let's see.
29.
I don't even understand that question. Okay, let me ask you this one. We're looking for a similarity here. For example, a banana and an orange, a similarity would be they are both...
round.
Fruit.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
All okay. Right.
Colorful.
Similarities between trains and bicycles.
Both have wheels.
Okay. Of course, obviously not. True, with the trains
have wheels.
Okay,
bikes have wheels.
I'm not here to judge you, sir. Except for when I'm.
All right, both
I'm
are made out of metal. Tests.
Okay, watch and a ruler.
Watch and a ruler.
What's the similarity there?
Trying to think of something that isn't that just doesn't work. They both have numbers.
Okay,
they're both measurement.
Don't try to justify.
They're both round.
Okay. Now, I earlier on gave you 5 words.
Oh, you
Get one of these.
It is that. They do.
It is in here.
Yeah, it was face velvet. All I can think of is cake, and I know that's not a word, but it's got velvet in it, so I think automatically of cake. Face velvet. I don't remember.
Okay. And all right. And then what? Well, I'm not going to give you the date, month, year, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know where you are. Date.
Do not ask me that. I really don't know the date.
I don't know it either.
I don't know the date. The 18th of...
Wednesday, January 17th.
Thank you.
That's why we have it at the beginning of every show. Okay.
It's Wednesday, January 17th.
What year?
2018.
What's today? What's the
Wouldn't it
the
be
day?
Great Wednesday? Wouldn't it be great if it was... If the one of the real legitimate questions is who's president, and you'd be,
me. I looked in the mirror. What place are you in?
Chair, studio, okay. Los Colinas,
what
Texas,
city?
Earth.
Okay, city. Yeah. You got that.
You're
okay.
Listening to the Glenn Beck program.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, thank you, sir.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so we will take a break, and I will go through and grade this for you.
Could you kick me off the show? Is there the 25th Amendment that you could kick me?
That is
right off the.
This has been a giant ruse
really...
to make you take this test and see if you are mentally fit to do this program.
I will tell you that is, with the exception of one of the last questions of, and what were those five words? That was not...
Not hard, right?
Yeah, not hard. Not hard. The you know,
I mean, you could easily screw one of them up. You could easily have a problem here or there. Now, Trump did very well on it. You know, but again, he also knew if he got anything wrong, it would be a major news story. So he may be focused a little bit more than you. However, we can make it a major news story too.
I don't think so. I mean, I think somebody questioning your mental agility is, you know, if you're taking it seriously, that's a lot of pressure.
Okay, well, we'll hold you to the same standards then. I was going to give you a break, but we'll be happy to hold you to the same standard as the president. I think that's fair.
No, I don't.
And I'm going to go through
just
a little grading here, and you do the commercial, if you can get through it.
Face, velvet cake, orange, trapdoor.
Is this the commercial, or are you...
I'm just trying to remember what those words were.
Okay, got it.
Okay. Last year, the head of FEMA, Brock Long, told the media he wants everybody to understand this. We ain't coming. It's actually not exactly what he said, but pretty much. FEMA is broke. The system is broken. And there's a new normal that Americans can't rely on the federal government to be the first responder in case of trouble. Okay. So in other words, we ain't coming. This is the head of FEMA. And he said it right before Christmas, so nobody would really pay attention. But I'm telling you. Did you see what happened in Japan yesterday? Do you know what happened, Stu?
Yeah, the fake another false warning of a missile attack.
Yeah.
That's a little weird.
Japan is saying we don't know what happened.
Uh-huh.
I think I do. In fact, we're going to address it on television tonight. I think we better start paying attention because, you know, some chaotic times are right around the corner. That's why I trust My Patriot Supply. They are the leaders when it comes to food storage. Did you hear the panic? We had the guy on I think, Monday. One of the guys who was like, you know, we just kind of hid. We didn't know what to do. And then we had another person that was in Hawaii that lived there and had prepared and, you know, could live for 60 days. And he said, he just called my wife and said, get home. And we got home and we were fine. We knew we would be okay. That comes from being prepared. That peace of mind. My Patriot Supply. Right now you can get 102 servings of survival food for only $99. Call 800-200-7163 or order online at preparewithglenn.com. You're going to receive breakfast, lunch, dinner, last up to 25 years in storage. Do it now, 800-200-7163 or preparewithglenn.com. 800-200-7163. PrepareWithGlenn.com.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Okay. Dr. Stu program, 1-800-DRSTU.
No, you're not a doctor, and there's not enough numbers in that. Okay. But you've given me the test that the president received, which is a fairly simple test.
Fairly simple.
Fairly simple
Difficult
test.
Difficult to do in pressure, maybe in front of a national audience, but somewhat.
No. Okay. I thought I was pretty good.
Okay.
I thought he was pretty good.
So here's your grading.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Their first, you had three drawing questions. Yeah. Your first one was drawing from letters to numbers. You executed that properly, with the exception of some of your lines were sloppy, but I did not take any points away from that.
Oh, well, thank you.
One point there. Copy the cube. Here's the what you can do. When one point is allocated for correctly executed drawing, must be three-dimensional. Check. Mm-hmm. You're right. No line is added. Correct. All lines are drawn. Oh, no. You left out one of the back lines, making you lose that point. Drawing a clock. There are three categories for the points you get there. One is contour. Is it a circle? I got to be news. I got a lot of...
I was
friendly to you and gave you, okay, it would kind of look like a circle, really more oval, but I'll give you that one. Numbers. Here's the category. It says all clock numbers must be present with no additional numbers.
I thought this was about what time was it, not
you
the clock.
You only wrote two numbers, and they are not even close to the right numbers in the right places. So I did not give you that.
Yeah, you're right.
Next up, hands.
Yeah.
The hour hand must clearly be shorter than the minute hand, and as you see on your paper...
No, it's not.
You wrote them the exact same length, so again, you do not get
because
that
because you know...
I gave you 2.5 points on that. Somehow. You're lucky. Because I gave you a half point for the contour, which was not a circle.
It's a circle.
Next up, you said this was a lion. You are correct. It is a lion.
Right here.
Next up, you said it was a rhino. Actually, it is a rhinoceros.
Oh.
So I gave you 2.5 points because you got camel right as well. Next up. The words.
Velvet cake.
Yes. Now, the first time I asked you the questions to repeat the words, you did not need to get them right, because it was all about the recall one. Then I gave you the digits. You got 2 out of 2 there. I gave you the letters. You got 1 out of 1 there. The subtraction, you got 1 point. Somehow they gave you a point for your first weird answer, and then you just thought it would be funny. And people who think they're funny.
I'm telling you, I will have that answer for you in about 10 minutes.
Going through the whole, got 2 points at the very end for your face and velvet, which I was actually impressed by. Your final score on my admittedly very difficult grading system gave you a 20.5 on a scale of 1 to 30. President scored a 30. It says here, the last line of this says, to be normal, you just need to get a 26. So you should be fine.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Last weekend, Hawaii. Yesterday, Japan. Flash message rang across all cell phones yesterday in Japan. NHK news alert. North Korea likely to have launched a missile. The government J alert, which is Japanese version of EAS, evacuate inside building or underground. Okay. Can you imagine living with those things and not knowing if they're real or not? Took the state of Hawaii almost 40 minutes to issue the false alarm. It took the Japanese 5 minutes. But that makes 2 nuclear weapon false alarms within the Pacific Theater in just a matter of days. So what's going on? Well, we happen to have some audio of what we think the problem was in Japan. Listen.
Don't push this button, because that will set off the bomb immediately and we'll all be dead. Now, repeat back what I just said.
I'm Groot.
Uh-huh.
I'm Groot.
That's right.
I'm Groot.
No! No, that's the button that will kill everyone!
So that's what we think happened. We're really not sure. A little tip for the Japanese. Baby Groot, probably not the best employee to have pushing the emergency alert buttons. After seeing the computer interface in the Hawaiian system... it's not surprising that this mistake happened. I mean, it looks like an old Apple II computer. It does. And Hawaii, 1981 called. They want their technology back. But what happened in Japan? What caused that false alarm? They don't know. The Japanese government hasn't stated yet. They say they don't know yet. If they do, they aren't telling anyone. Here's what bothers me. we really need to get a full and detailed explanation from both incidents, because speculation is running wild, and you can't blame people for filling in holes when information is scarce, especially at a time when nuclear war seems more likely now than it has been since the Cold War. But it's not the people and panic that I worry about. It is, if these continue to happen, will you believe them when they are real? God forbid. Also, the next war is going to be fought with ones and zeros, not bombs. Are we being hacked? The latest fake alert came simultaneously as Japan, along with other 19 other countries, were meeting in Canada to talk about, wait for it, escalating the pressure on North Korea over its nuclear program. Now, I don't know whether it's faulty, out-of-date technology, if somebody just had butterfingers like they did in Hawaii, or if Kim Jong-un has weaponized Baby Groot. I don't know. But there's a problem here. Nuclear weapons are no longer the modern-day first strike. Cyber warfare is. This is hopefully not what has caused these false alarms, but we should all have that creeping thought about how these things are now all too possible in this day and age. Science fiction becomes reality between now and the next 10 years. We better stay ahead of the curve, because a brave new world approaches.
It's Wednesday, January 17th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We had William Hertling on yesterday, and I wanted to have him back on today to kind of finish the conversation. He's written a series of four books called the Singularity Series. He also has his latest book, The Kill Process. But the four in the series of the Singularity is a really good explanation and a good view, in an entertaining way, to get a handle on the kinds of things that we are going to be facing. Yesterday, we were just talking about the technology that is on the very near horizon in the next few years, and how that could affect us, all the way from, self-driving cars to personal assistants that know you really well. Today, we want to look into what's just around the corner in maybe 15 years. We're closer to what we're going to talk about today than we are to September 11th. We are closer to things that we only thought were science fiction than we were to the things that we grew up with just in the last 20 years. So William Hertling is joining us again. Hello, William. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back.
Good. Yesterday we started talking about what's coming 2030, 2035, and that is the merging of man and machine, and the upgrade of the human mind and the connection to the web. Can you kind of go into that and what and how real this is?
Sure. So we were talking about neural implants, and I know you've had Ray Kurzweil on a lot. He likes to talk about the exponential trends in technology.
Yeah.
And I do the same thing. I have these spreadsheets that I look at technology. I look at various attributes. How fast is my connection to the internet? How fast is my processor? How much storage do I have? How big is my computer? And when you look at these trends, one of the things that you see is that computers are getting very, very small indeed. And that means that we're on the horizon of the technology, everything that would fit in a computer fitting inside your brain, and having the kind of direct neural connections that would allow it to be fully integrated with your brain. And there's research happening today to do this, to work with people who are paralyzed, who have no motor control because they've lost the connection between the brain and their body. So that's being restored. So there's some great medical benefits that are driving this kind of research, as well as just the need for our ability to get information in and out of our head, or our ability to augment our intellect.
So let me go a couple of places with you. I have read that we are just a couple of years away from making the neural connection to like a bionic arm. So you're much more like the $6 million man, if you will, if you were my age and remember that.
Sure.
That you control it exactly the way you control your hand now. Are we that close to that?
We are. I mean, a great example is the cochlear implant, which is to correct deafness in people who have a defective portion of the hearing system. I don't understand exactly which part, but this is an implant that connects into the auditory nerves that replaces the function of the ear. And what happens when they implant one of these is when it's first turned on, people don't really hear anything. And then over a matter of days, their brain starts to integrate the signals from this implant and their hearing gets better and better. And then it becomes crisp. And then it becomes maybe not back 100% to normal, but good enough for day-to-day life. And it's just an example of how adaptable the brain is to be able to interface with these external tools.
So I know there's a guy who's a scientist now and a guy who makes prosthetic limbs. He was a mountain climber and didn't have use of his legs anymore, had his legs removed, in fact, and was told, you know, you'll never do anything again. He went back to school and decided, yeah, I'm going to walk again. And he went to MIT. And he started studying, and he started to make his own artificial legs. He is now a better mountain climber than he was before because of these artificial legs. We're getting to a point to where in the next 10 years, your artificial limb will be so much better than your actual limb that we'll have to decide whether doctors can remove a perfectly good limb to replace it. Do you believe that?
I have a little bit of a hard time imagining whether or not we'll remove perfectly good limbs, but I can certainly imagine that we're going to add on technology where it doesn't require moving anything, right? So if I could get an implant and I could be smarter or happier than I am today, I'm almost certainly going to do it, right? I'm not going to give anything up. And that leads to a very interesting sort of reaction, because what happens when you want to send your kids to school and all of the other kids have neural implants? They're all smarter. And now your kid, if you have an objection to this technology, yeah, your kid's behind everybody else. So is anybody going to do that? What if you're looking for a job and you want to go into the workplace and everyone else has a neural implant, so they're smarter? You know, is there pressure now for you to get a neural implant? So that's a really interesting place to me.
So I asked Ray Kurzweil that question, and he said, no, everybody will get one because they'll be cheap. And I said, but what about people who don't want to get one? And he looked at me almost confused and said, why wouldn't you want one? And I said, well, because there will be people who say, I want to be natural. I want to be authentic. I don't want to be connected to all of that all of the time. And he really didn't see that happening, which was odd, I thought. And he said, well, it won't cause a problem anyway. And if you really think this through over time, if augmenting the human brain is really effective, you will not be able to function in society as non-augmented. And I don't see how not being augmented at some point doesn't become child abuse. People would do not want you driving on the road when there's a bunch of self-driving cars because you're a danger. In a society where the natural person can't understand what everybody's talking about, don't you become a danger? Don't you have to be limited?
Sure. I think one of the great things, right, though, is society is pretty large. We don't all have to participate in exactly the same society. So even today, you may see some people who are going to make intentional choices about not having certain technology, not participating in a consumer or materialistic society. I think we're going to have to, we'll see even more of this. We're going to see a growing divide between people who opt in to all the latest and greatest technology can do, bringing us along to what people call sort of the postmodern era, the post-human era, right? Or people who want to maintain that natural state.
When people say that the end of humans could be 50, 70 years away, I read that two ways. I read it as, well, because Homo sapiens won't exactly be Homo sapiens once we start upgrading. Then you're something else. You're not a pure Homo sapien. But after reading your book, I'm afraid that, you know, they actually mean that humans will not exist in 50, 70, 100 years. Where do you stand on that?
I think there's a pretty good chance that we will either not exist or will be so changed that we can't imagine that from where we are today. I mean, I was having a conversation with my kids just two nights ago. They're all of an age where they don't remember the pre-smartphone era.
Mm-hmm.
And how we spent our time, and they just can't picture it. And so what they imagine is everyone's just always got their head buried in a phone. That's just what people do. That's how bad it has always been, right? And they can't remember that difference. As we move forward, as people are augmenting, as they're upgrading their minds, which I'm sure is going to have all kinds of amazing benefits, right?
Yeah.
Like every other piece of technology, it's going to be amazing. The temptation is going to be so strong. And yet we really, from where we stand today, we can't imagine what that new world is going to look like.
Have you made a decision whether you would upgrade?
Well, you know, I'm one of these people, right? I see both the pros and cons.
Yeah.
I think I would go down that path. I think it will be an interesting adventure. And yet at the same point in time, you know, I know that there'll be things that we give up as a result.
I want to take you next to the basic question of what is life? Because I think that is one of the main things that we're going to have to answer with robotics. Is that life? The moment they say, I'm alive, I can think, I'm self-aware. Is that life? Is that not life? We're going to map your brain, and we're going to download you and put you into a machine because your body is beyond repair. And, you know, so you'll live on forever. Is that really life? We get to that next.
William Hertling is the author of several books on technology, and the series of the Singularity series is the one that Glenn started with. The latest book is called Kill Process, which is a separate storyline. WilliamHertling.com is where you can find it, or at H-E-R-T-L-I-N-G, at Hertling on Twitter.
Highly recommend the series. Just get it at Amazon, the Singularity series. When it comes to your mortgage, buying or refinancing, you need people that take away stress, not add more. And that's why there's American Financing. They're going to customize a loan program that will fit your financial needs. And if you're a veteran or if you haven't used your VA benefits, with interest rates this low, right now is the time to get a new home or to refinance. If you're looking to refinance or purchase, you should move forward as rates are still close to historic lows. And the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing are dedicated to helping you make smart mortgage decisions that align with your unique financial goals. American Financing. You'll get straightforward, effortless mortgage experience, so call them now. American Financing at 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440 or AmericanFinancing.net. Go there now.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
The author William Hertling. He is an author of a multi-award-winning series of books, the Singularity series. The Avogadro Corp is the first one, AI Apocalypse, The Last Firewall, and The Turing Exception. They are really good, take place over the next 40 years, and kind of show you the things that we are facing in a novel form. And it's really exciting and really enjoying, and you will really learn a lot. Without giving away, you know, anything in the end, let me give away the end of the last book. You have people digitizing themselves and going out into space because the world has been lost to technology and to AI. How do we deal with the idea of that's not life? That is life. How do we deal with that with computers and with robots? Because I think that's the first place we're going to see it.
Yeah, the obviously we're going to have robots or AI. They're going to talk to us and they're going to say, "Hey, I'm alive. Don't turn me off."
Right.
Now, if your computer said that to you today, you would know that that's not real. But they're going to keep saying it, and the AI is going to keep getting smarter. And one day, there's going to be an AI that's going to really seem like it is alive. And then we really have to think about two things, which is, what does it mean? What is our relationship to this other thing, right? Is it something we own? Is it our servant? Is it a person? Is it a friend? What does it mean for them to be turned on or off? But what does it also mean for us? So an example that I actually got from Daniel H. Wilson, the author of Robopocalypse, is an example he likes to give. So imagine that you're out, you're with your kid, and you get really frustrated at your car, and you kicked the car because you were frustrated that it wouldn't start or something, and your child saw that. Now, they might think it's a little bit odd, but they're probably not going to be too traumatized by you doing that because you're dealing with an inanimate object. Now, on the other hand, imagine someone gets frustrated with a family dog, and they kick the family dog. That's going to be a whole lot more traumatizing for that kid to witness, right? Because we empathize with them. So what does it mean if you have an AI that appears to be alive, right? Your kids are going to think it's alive. I mean, think about how kids interact with technology today.
It is,
right?
Yeah.
They're going to believe it. And so how trauma-inducing is it to them to think about, like, turning off their AI friend or their robotic dog reaches the end of its life and we throw it away?
Everything is about to change, and I can't recommend highly enough. Read the Singularity series by William Hertling. It's available on Amazon. The Singularity series, start it today. It's a great read.
Beck, Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
The founders of the new group New California took an early step towards statehood on Monday after reading their own Declaration of Independence from California. They say California has become ungovernable. And they said, what we'd like to do is take most of the current day California, including the rural counties, and leave all the coasts and the urban areas to, you know, California, California. They said the current state of California has been governed by a tyranny. After years of overtaxation, regulation, and monoparty politics, the state of California and many of its 58 counties have become ungovernable, citing a decline in essential basic services, including education, law enforcement, infrastructure, and health care. The group says they hope to model their split over what happened in Virginia, becoming the state of West Virginia. The authority comes in Article 4, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution, And New California wants to be the 51st state. I will tell you that I don't have a problem with this. I worry that we are dividing ourselves into groups where we don't even understand each other. So we're becoming balkanized. But, you know, I just don't understand. You know, there's people that want to, you know, they want the socialism and everything else. Good. I'm fine with that. Leave me alone. You know, you want to have your socialistic thing? Go do your socialistic thing. You want to be a state? Great. We're not going to bail you out if it fails.
What part of socialism do you think allows them to leave you alone?
None.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
If it was leaving you alone, it wouldn't be socialism.
Correct.
Unfortunately. You're right. They're like, there have been experiments in history. We did this on one of the chalkboards several weeks ago.
Great chalkboard.
Where they went into the people who initially experimented with the idea of socialism, and they did it in a way that was not Stalin-esque. It was not Castro-esque. It was, hey, really good things. We're gonna all live together, and we're gonna do things to help each other. And it was presented with a smiley face.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done unlike socialism is usually done, which is they say it's going to be great, but in reality, they wind up murdering all their citizens. These were, generally speaking, good people. They were people who, with good intentions, who tried this with the best of hopes.
Yeah, they did drive out the old people. They didn't kill them,
no.
But they drove them out. Once you weren't able to work, and once you were of a certain age, you had to leave the community and go away from the family. So, you know, it wasn't a death camp.
Look, we're talking the socialism scale. Don't call me out for these minor,
infractions. You're right. This is a happy one.
This is one of the better ones. But what they found out is that, you know, without incentives, without making people wanting to better themselves, because there was no hope to better themselves. That was the design of the system. That the society fell apart over and over and over again. One of them, it was even here in Dallas, Texas. One of the first examples of that.
What's the name of that tower? The Heritage? Is it the Heritage?
No.
What's the name of that tower in downtown?
Reunion Tower.
Tower.
That's right. Thank you.
That was the name of the town, Reunion. And it was right downtown Dallas. It was a socialist utopia.
Mm-hmm.
And it failed miserably.
And it was with talented people and people with good intentions.
It is the reason why Dallas is the city that it is, because all of these talented socialist utopians that had real skill and real, you know, intellect, they came and they tried it. And when it failed, they all started leaving and they were like, okay, that doesn't work. Let's try something else. And they went towards, you know, capitalism and freedom, and they built Dallas.
Yeah.
So that one worked.
Yeah. And that's the story of socialism over and over and over again. So it would be like, we certainly have elements, flares into socialism that other states try. We know that in California. And I mean, you know, Vermont had, has massive experiments into socialized healthcare, and many, you know, our country at some level has done that as well. You can have these little things, but they affect everybody. These little socialist plans that eat up 1-3% of your economy, and they just continue to grow all the time, wind up really affecting people and hurting the growth of an economy and hurting people and lives.
If Californians want to try it, you get all the best land. You get all the coastland. You get everything. You get all the sweet parts. Well, I think the mountains are a sweet part too, and you know where you can actually grow food is also good. But take it. I mean, I really would if we could have a peaceful civil war, and I think most people in our country that were real constitutionalists would say, you pick the states. Give us 25. Give us the worst 25. Give us the ones that you just say, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. We'll show you. Because I have absolute confidence that when people are left to do what they can do, they'll change the world. So give us the worst 25 states. We'll live there. Now, don't come in and don't blame us when it goes bad for you, because it's going to. But why are we all having to be trapped under this socialist umbrella? Why are we all forced to live like, you know, the way half of us don't think we should live? In fact, we have a study out done by a Democrat, presented to the Democrats, begging them, stop it. You're out of step with the American people. You're out of step with the Democrats.
Yeah. Remember after Romney lost, there was this big postmortem, and it was like, look, this is what happened. We weren't liberal enough on immigration. They had this big, like, that is just kind of what has happened here, right? It's a study of what, hey, wait a minute, the Democrats lost. Why the heck did they lose? They shouldn't have lost this election. Everyone said Hillary is going to win. Why did they lose? And you kind of look at this and you say, well, maybe it's because you're taking everyone who isn't a hardcore Bernie Sanders supporter and tossing them to the side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you're embracing that hardcore left thing. We saw this with Tom Perez when they talked about basically kicking everybody out that was not a pro-choice candidate. We don't want you running as a Democrat unless you are pro-choice. And like that is, yeah, sure, that's 90% of them anyway. But, you know, there have been major politicians for the Democrats, some of the most successful politicians that have been pro-life Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
At least they say they were.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're saying, well, we're going to reject that chunk of the population. Is it a huge chunk? I don't think it's a huge chunk. But
I don't think it's more than that. We're going to get into this research tonight at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV on my show at 5. But again, it was done by a Democrat trying to convince the Democratic Party, you're going the wrong way, and They're not listening. But I think it's more than just, pro-life. It's a rejection of God. It's a rejection of traditional common sense, not traditional values, traditional common sense. It's becoming a rejection of science, and it's becoming so radical that I think the Democratic Party in many ways scares many Democrats. They're not going to say that out loud, but I think there's parts of it. When they see what's happening in the college campuses, I think the average Democrat looks at that and goes, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. And the pathway to the lunatic fringe is just getting paved every day and making it easier to go that way. Look at Cory Booker yesterday. I mean, Cory Booker is in the middle of essentially his audition for a 2020 run, mm-hmm. senator from New Jersey. And he looks like a complete lunatic harassing a woman in the Trump administration about immigration and DACA and all of these other things. And he's trying to be more animated because he knows he had to win a primary. He's got to be as crazy as possible and look like he's got to outleft Elizabeth Warren. He's got to outleft Kamala Harris. He's got to outleft all of these crazy people, Bernie Sanders, all these people that are already there. He's got to figure out a way to get to their left. And the only way he can think of doing it is waving his hands around and making his eyes big and yelling at a woman, which I thought was bad from Democrats. I thought you're supposed to. I thought that was mansplaining. It seems like what Cory Booker did yesterday was mansplaining if a Republican did it. For Cory, I guess it's okay.
Here's a clip of what Cory Booker said yesterday.
I hurt when Dick Durbin called me. I had tears of rage when I heard about his experience in that meeting. And for you not to feel that hurt and that pain and to dismiss some of the questions of my colleagues saying I've already answered that line of questions when tens of millions of Americans are hurting right now because of what they're worried about what happened in the White House. That's unacceptable to me. And I've got a president of the United States whose office I respect, who talks about the countries of origins of my fellow citizens in the most despicable of manner. You don't remember. You can't remember the words of your commander-in-chief. I find that unacceptable.
I mean, if you see this video, and if you haven't seen it yet, his eyes are wide. He's putting angry face on. He's trying to, he's screaming at a woman. In front of all these people. And it's interesting because, first of all, tears of rage. Did you really? Here's a guy, Donald Trump, every day they spend calling him essentially Adolf Hitler. He's a dictator. He's insane. But You know, we're supposed to believe that they believe that. And at the same time, if he changes the terms of their immigration negotiation, we're supposed to believe they're so surprised by that that they fall into tears of rage. Come on. This person's either completely insane and unpredictable and you should be expecting these things, or the opposite. We're going to get really upset that they change his changes his mind in a negotiation. Obviously, this is one of those ridiculous grandstanding appearances that we get from senators all the time when they try to run for president. And the other thing is, too, what is he criticizing her of at this time? That she isn't answering the questions because she said she's already answered them. Is it you're really that upset because someone said, actually, I've already answered that question? What she's not saying she's not going to answer it. She's saying she's already covered that material. You're really going to get that upset over that? It's clearly overacting. You know, it's a guy who's trying to, you know, build up a pathway to this fake anger so he can get donations, so he can get, you know, a little buzz from the grassroots. He's trying to build himself into a thing. And it's so obvious he's trying here because he's trying so hard to convince you he's mad right now. It really comes off as pathetic.
I think he's going to connect with a lot of people on the left and not necessarily just the far left. I think he's going to come. You watch. I think he's going to turn out to look very, very balanced and very, you know, normal, middle of the road.
That performance is going to get him balanced?
No, I didn't say that performance. But I think he's. I think that's the way he's going to be viewed by a lot of people on the left. Mm. And the problem is that our extremes are so far. I mean, we're talking Marxists, atheists, revolutionaries, people who are telling us that men and women, that designation doesn't even exist. We're talking crazy things. And on the other side, it's hard to defend some of the things that said by the right and are being defended by the right. So you have all these people on both sides who are saying, nobody's representing me. Nobody's representing me. I don't agree with them. I don't agree with them. That's the opportunity. Now, who is going to occupy that space? Do you see any politician moving genuinely to that space? No. The parties won't allow it. Fresh new year has begun, and if you're setting new goals for your business, how are you going to reach them? You need the right people on your team, and ZipRecruiter has transformed how you go about finding them. ZipRecruiter posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just a single click. Not everybody does that, but then they take it a step further. ZipRecruiter goes out and looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply. So if you're looking for a, you know, a new whatever, you post it, but is the person that you're really looking for, are they going to see your post on that day? That's where the smart technology of ZipRecruiter comes in. It goes out and it searches for the people that are right for you. That's why 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in the first day. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Right now, post your job at ZipRecruiter.com for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck and it'll be free. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Glad you've joined us today. If you live in California and you're part of the independence of a new California, I support you. Not going to happen, but I support you. State Department has just issued this warning. If you were planning on visiting North Korea, they have issued a travel advisory, level 4, do not travel. But if you still decide to go, you should do a couple of things. Draft a will and designate appropriate insurance beneficiaries or power of attorney. And then also discuss a plan with loved ones regarding care and custody of your children and your pets before you go.
I think that's going to make good me advice. Say, I'm going to stay. I'm going to stay home.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
You can imagine the air was thick with tension as FEMA agents arrived. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, their armed security detail, they entered the warehouse. They were on a mission to see if the rumors were true. They couldn't be true. 100 days after Hurricane Maria ripped through the island, half of the population is still living without electricity. Have you seen the satellite pictures? We're 100 days, that's a third of the year in, and we still, people don't have electricity? Despite the aid, construction materials, everything that we sent, still they haven't rebuilt very much, and they haven't restored the electrical grid. So there was speculation that the Puerto Rican Electric Power Authority, or PREPA for short, had been hoarding these materials. Our teams went into the warehouse, and it was easy for them to see this was true. It was filled to the brim with equipment and resources. That explained why FEMA agents were so perplexed by the lack of everything that the people needed in Puerto Rico. PREPA received the equipment to rebuild, and then they just didn't do anything with it. So while the people of Puerto Rico are forced to get by without life-saving electricity every single day, their salvation is sitting in a warehouse. America should do something. We did. It's sitting in a warehouse. Corruption. It has just got to stop. And all of our governments are corrupt. Government inefficiency, idiocy, and corruption, all at the expense of citizens. How many lives could have been improved, even saved, if PREPA just did their job and would distribute the materials to Puerto Ricans?
It's Wednesday, January 17th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
If I can geek out just a little bit, today's kind of an exciting day for me. I've wanted to talk to this guy since I read his first novel, Fatherland, which is one of my favorite books of all time. I just love it. You know, I've never been big enough to be able to get him on. He also did, I can't remember the name of the book, The Code. I'll have to ask him about it. Another great book. Lots of great, great stories. And great novels from Robert Harris. He is the author of a new novel, Munich, and it is all about the Munich Treaty and Neville Chamberlain and what happened with Hitler. But he takes it the way he always does and works a new storyline into it. Welcome to the program, Robert Harris. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, Glenn. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. Are you over in London?
No, I live just outside, not far from Oxford.
Okay.
In the country.
It's a thrill to have you on. I want to talk to you a little bit about the book, but I don't want to spoil it for anybody, and I don't spoil it for me because I'm halfway through. You know, it revolves around Neville Chamberlain, and I'm not a real fan of Neville Chamberlain, and he gets kind of a bad rap. Why are you? What is your attraction there? And I, it, it, I seem to think that you are a fan of his.
Well, I wouldn't say I was a fan, to be honest. But I do think there are some stories in history which are really quite opposite to what most people think. About 30 years ago, I did a documentary for the BBC television about the 50th anniversary of the Munich Agreement. It's going to be the 80th anniversary this September. And I discovered that it was completely different to what I thought. In particular, Adolf Hitler regarded it as a terrible defeat. And that alone, I think, most people don't understand. And I wrote Fatherland, as you mentioned, but I always had in the back of my mind a desire to write a novel about the Munich Agreement, and I had the idea of writing it from the point of view of one of the officials who flew out with Chamberlain to meet Hitler in September 1938. And then I decided I'd also have a German character who travels on Adolf Hitler's train from Berlin to meet Chamberlain at Munich. And so you follow these two men who were friends, who were at Oxford University together, as they head towards Munich. And it gives me an opportunity to write a first-hand account of both Hitler and of Chamberlain.
So how much, Robert, of the novel is really close to true? Like, for instance, the plot to kill Hitler at that point, was that going on?
Oh, yes. Everything in the book, really, pretty well, is true, apart from these two invented characters, Paul Hartman and Hugh Leggett, the German and the Englishman. Yes, I mean, essentially what happened was that Hitler decided in the beginning of the summer of 1938 that he would, for the first time, invade another country. And he issued orders to the German army to prepare to wipe Czechoslovakia off the face of the map. That was how he termed it. And the army came back and said they could do this in about 5 or 6 weeks. And he threw the plans back at them and said, I want to be in Prague within a week. And elements of the German army took fright at this. It was the first time that they really woke up to the fact of where Hitler was likely to lead them. And for the first time, there were contacts between opposition elements in Berlin and the British government in London. And there was a slightly crazy scheme, if the British and French declared war, to try and arrest Hitler. I don't actually think it was that serious, but certainly it was the real first beginnings of the rumblings of a resistance to Hitler as the Germans realized where it was heading.
Yeah, I was surprised when Chamberlain arrives in Munich that there were, you know, the oompa bands that were playing, you know, popular tunes from England, that the crowds cheered him. I always thought of the Germans not for peace, and that's not what it was.
Well, no, absolutely. There's no doubt in the historical record about that, that Hitler, according to all the reporters, including the American newspapers who were there, received much louder cheers whenever he appeared than Hitler got. And Hitler was furious about this. One of the reasons I wrote the novel was because I came across, there's a German journalist called Joachim Fest, who was the ghostwriter on the memoirs of Albert Speer, the Hitler's armament minister. And this, in this diary, Fest asked Speer one day back in the 60s, what did Hitler feel about Munich? And Speer said Hitler was in a rage for 2 weeks after Munich. He wouldn't even speak to his private staff, which was unusual for him. And then it all came pouring out at a private social occasion. He said, the German people have been fooled, and by Neville Chamberlain of all people. And what he was referring to was that Chamberlain, because he was the architect of a peace agreement, the German people staged a kind of anti-Hitler protest in the sixth year of his rule by cheering Chamberlain loudly whenever he appeared. This infuriated Hitler and was one of the reasons why I think he drew back from attacking Czechoslovakia.
So as I was reading this, and you really kind of spell it out, very colorful, the appearance of everything with Hitler was strong and militaristic and streamlined. And, you know, Mussolini is there, the same thing. And here comes a guy who kind of looks like a walrus and another guy who looks old and frail coming to the meeting. those two guys must have seen the English as complete things of the past and just weak.
Well, I think that that's true. There was a great contrast in Munich between, you know, the fascists, the Germans and the Italians, mostly quite young men in their smart uniforms, and these dowdy, quite elderly civilians in their crumpled suits who've flown into Munich. But appearances are a bit deceptive. One of the other reasons I wanted to put Chamberlain in the novel is that he was a tough old bird, and Winston Churchill said that about him too. He was a really dominant prime minister. He bossed it and lauded it over his colleagues, and he was quite vain and arrogant in his way, and as determined on peace as Hitler was on war. And he drove Hitler mad because Hitler was not really interested. The pretext for war was the return of 3.5 million Germans who'd been assigned to this new state of Czechoslovakia in 1919 after the First World War. But that was only the pretext. The reality was, of course, that Hitler wanted a war of conquest into the East, you know, the subject I cover in Fatherland. Chamberlain was determined to keep Britain out of a war on this issue. We didn't have a treaty with Czechoslovakia, but the French did. So if Hitler had attacked Czechoslovakia, the French would have been legally obliged to go to Czechoslovakia's defense, and the British would have felt obliged to stand by France. So it would have been like the First World War, with all the countries being dragged in. Chamberlain wanted to avoid this. So he actually flew to see Hitler, which was a sensational development, especially for a man in his 70th year. And it was a grave mistake on Hitler's part to agree to see Chamberlain, because Chamberlain naturally asked him what were his grievances, and Hitler told him. And Chamberlain said, "Leave it with me, I'll see what I can do," effectively. And he removed Hitler's pretext for war. He said, well, if the concern is these 3.5 million Germans in Sudetenland, I'm sure we can arrange for them, where the majority is German, for those lands to be transferred to Germany. And this is what forced Hitler in the end to back down. Goebbels said, you can't fight a war on details, and Hitler couldn't do it. And so he missed that opportunity for war. And at the beginning of the novel, I put this quote from Hitler in the bunker in February 1945 when he said, we should have gone to war in 1938. September 1938 would have been the perfect time. And throughout the war, Hitler felt he was fighting it a year too late because of Munich. He'd wanted to invade France in 1939. He'd wanted to invade the Soviet Union in 1940. And instead, his timetable was 12 months behind. And in that time, the British, and more particularly perhaps the Russians, rearmed massively.
Yeah, have you seen the movie Darkest Hour yet?
Yes, I have.
What do you think of that?
I thought it was a good piece of entertainment. I thought it was a brilliant performance by Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Because I'm sympathetic to Chamberlain, slightly more than most people are, I know. I felt that it was unfair on Chamberlain because, first of all, who built the Spitfires that were fighting the Battle of Britain? Chamberlain did when he spent 50% of British government revenues on rearmament in 1939, an enormous amount for a country of peace.
Right.
And also Chamberlain, because of his experience dealing with Hitler, backed Churchill in rejecting any suggestion of listening to peace terms. And because Chamberlain at that time was leader of the Tory party, his was the decisive voice. And most people think that Chamberlain wanted to do a deal with Hitler. The opposite is the case. He supported Churchill very strongly and was the decisive voice on the 27th of May 1940 at the cabinet meeting where it was decided to not even hear what Hitler's peace terms were.
Is there, when you're looking at today's world and you're seeing everything that's going on, your job, and you've been so good at this, you look at history and you see missed opportunities or chances for things to have been different. What do you think we're going to look back over the last 20 years and and say, if this event was understood at the time, it would have changed things?
Well, I think, you know, history is a beguiling subject because it enables you to go back and see where people went wrong. And another of the quotes at the front of my book is from a great British historian called F.W. Maitland, who said, you must always remember that what now lies in the past once lay in the future. Chamberlain didn't know that Hitler planned a Holocaust. Nobody could foresee exactly how the Nazi regime would go. You can only deal with things as they are, as they appear to you. Obviously, there are huge forces at work in the world today that we are finding it very hard to even understand, let alone respond to. I think they are a large degree to do with technology and the way that that is completely transforming our society, destroying the assumptions on which most of us have built our lives. It's a frightening time of change, and often after a long period of relative stability, which we've had since 1945, this leads to a kind of complete revolution. In a way, the situation we're going through now reminds me rather of the period before 1914. One feels that there's something big coming along.
Yeah.
How I would deal with that, I don't know. I mean, part of the point of my Munich novel is that these two men, these two young men, are sort of trapped by history.
Yeah.
They can see they're heading to the chasm, the abyss, but there's nothing they individually can do, although they try to do it. And it feels that history has reached one of those points. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
That something big is happening.
Yeah.
And nobody can quite grasp it.
Yeah. You can feel it. You can feel it coming. Robert, do you have a second? Can you hang on while we take a quick break?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Hold on. Robert Harris, the author of the book Munich. It is out now. It's a novel. He's a tremendous writer. If you've never read a Robert Harris book, you should. And you can start with Munich, the novel. Back in just a second. First, let me tell you about security systems that deter burglars. There is a burglary every 8 seconds in America. And that's because a lot of us just don't have any protection at all. And it doesn't happen at night. It happens when you're gone. They're just as afraid of running into you as you are running into them. Let me recommend a brilliant security system. It is Simply Safe, ridiculously smart. Its sensors protect every point of access to your home. Plus, if a burglar so much as tries to break in, the sirens go off, the camera takes a picture of that person, and police are already called and on the way. Best of all, Simply Safe has 24/7 monitoring that is $14.99 a month. What do you pay now? About 50? 40? If you're lucky? Never a long-term contract, $14.99 a month, and you own the system, even with a 60-day money-back guarantee. Try it today. SimplySafeBeck.com. Go there now and save big. It's SimplySafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Robert Harris, the author of the new book, Munich, the novel. He is one of my favorite writers. Robert, I don't know how much time did we schedule you for?
I've got all the time in the world. It's a pleasure talking to you.
I have two things. And you know, what I love about your books is, for instance, Chamberlain. I have a new look at Chamberlain, and I have to go back now and really study him again. And see him in a different light and see the peace in our day in a different way. But you've done this to me a few times. One of the things that really was a pivot in my life was your book Conclave. I love that book. And the speech that the guy who ends up being Pope gives about certainty is something that I think everybody in the world should hear. I read that part and I thought, oh my gosh, that is the problem. Do you remember that part of the book?
I do, yes. It was a bit of a nerve on my part, really, to write a novel about the election of a pope, especially as I told it from the point of view of a senior cardinal. But I just, I've always been interested in power and how and its effects on men and women and what it does to them and what they try to do with it. And really, almost the ultimate election is the election of a pope. And this character really came into my head very strongly. And he's the head of the College of Cardinals when the Pope dies, who has to organize the election, even though he'd asked the Pope just before he died if he could stand down because he was having a crisis of faith. And that was really the key to unlocking that book, the idea that a man might actually be charged with electing the new Pope and yet at the same time be plagued with doubt. And he has to give this huge televised address on when the conclave starts voting, which is seen by a billion people. And so what does he say? And a kind of spirit moves him, and he makes this, gives this sermon about the importance of doubt.
So hang on,
Without doubt, there's no faith.
I want to pick it up with there, and then also another one of your books, The Fear Index, which another one that I think everybody should read. Robert Harris,
Glenn,
new book,
Beck,
Munich. More in a second.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Noted author Robert Harris, the author of the new book, Munich, the novel. It is about the Munich Accords and Neville Chamberlain and Hitler duking it out, and what we kind of misunderstand. I'm finding out as I'm reading this, Neville Chamberlain's, you know, we have peace in our day. That was the Munich Treaty. And Hitler saw that as a loss. It's a great, a thrilling novel, and that I think you really enjoy. Robert is one of my favorite authors. I fell in love with his stuff with Fatherland, which came out in the 90s, and I'm a little upset that you can't buy on Kindle anymore. Fatherland, I've read five or six of your books, Robert, and one of them I want to talk to you about is The Fear Index. A minute ago, you said, you know, you were concerned about technology and how that's going to change us. And The Fear Index is AI gone crazy. And it makes you look at AI in a completely different way.
Yeah, it's about a hedge fund manager in Geneva, who used to work for the Large Hadron Collider, and who sets up an artificially intelligent algorithmic trading operation, which, like Frankenstein's monster, also in Geneva, goes out of control. And I had a lot of fun writing it, but as you say, it's a pretty frightening superstructure over the world. This financial trading, most of us don't understand it. And we've seen, you know, in 2008, what happens when it gets out of control, how it affects all our lives. And in a way, the world has never really recovered from the disaster of the complexity of the financial world and the way, in the end, it caused so much trouble.
Well, it's very, I mean, the Fear Index is very Hitchcockian in a way, where it's just an average guy kind of caught up into something he doesn't understand is much, much bigger than, you know, anything he possibly imagined. And halfway through, I'm thinking, I believe all of this is possible, even if it's not done by AI, with the tracking and the data that people have. I mean, some government, you know, becomes like, you know, Nazi Germany. This isn't going to be hard to manipulate and hard to do to people.
No, I agree. And I think, you know, whatever the next war is like, what one fears the most is that it won't be anything like what we've been thinking about. It will be some form of cyber war. And in this country, certainly, if, for example, we were to suddenly not be able to take money out of an ATM machine because of a cyber attack, how quickly a city like London, which is said to be only five meals away from starvation. That is, that there's only enough food in the supermarkets. It's really 24-hour resupply. Mm-hmm. How quickly civil order could collapse. And I don't think that's like a doomsday scenario anymore. I have a horrible feeling that's what the next war will be like. It won't be like the one that Neville Chamberlain and Adolf Hitler were talking about in 1938. It'll be something altogether more, potentially much more alarming, actually.
What is, as a writer, if I said to you, which one's the more believable scenario? North Korea launches. Putin, through, you know, nefarious ways, kind of cobbles together the old Soviet Union and is deeply embedded in all of our systems and turns us against each other, or financial doomsday that just kind of traps all of us into something ugly.
Well. I mean, you know, the second two could easily merge. I think that's what's frightening. North Korea, I think perhaps is in a weird sort of way. You know, there is a kind of mad, insane rationality to the North Korean regime in that they would blow their own brains out mm-hmm. if they launched any sort of attack. And people generally aren't quite that crazy, even if they may look it. But something like Putin that gradually shades into a conflict that gets out of hand, that's much more the way things go in history. You know, the Russian occupation of the Crimea was really the nearest thing we've seen to the Sudetenland crisis.
Oh, yeah. I was reading your book.
Did the West do anything? No, not really. They simply put on sanctions, but that was it.
Yeah, as I'm reading Munich, and he's talking about that, and that's all I could think of, is this is exactly the same argument that Putin was making.
Yes, and of course, you see, for Western governments, and for most Western people, the Crimea seems to be Russia's backyard. You know, you assume that it was really part of Russia. Most people would have thought, there's no appetite really to fight or suffer over an issue like that, just as I don't think there was much in 1938 in Britain, bearing in mind it was only 20 years after the First World War where the British alone had lost 750,000 men killed. There was no appetite to fight over that issue. And that's one of the things you've got to think about Munich, I think. You've got to put it in the context of its time.
Yeah.
Chamberlain said he thought there would be a spiritual breakdown in Britain if the ordinary people didn't see their leaders trying to do everything possible to avoid another great war. He destroyed his reputation trying to avoid it, but I think in the end he did do a service, even if inadvertently, in giving the country a year or more to rearm, and also it gave it a moral superiority and strength that Churchill was able to draw on, mm-hmm. as we see in Darkest Hour.
The name of the book is Munich, a Novel. The author is Robert Harris. Robert, thank you so much. God bless.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
That's one from my bucket list. Love that guy's writing.
Yeah, you had a little glimmer in your eye when that... That was a big one.
I like him. I love his books.
The Chamberlain stuff, I never had, you know, you never hear a positive take on Neville Chamberlain anymore.
Never.
Doesn't happen.
Never.
But I mean, he's right. Obviously, he delayed. I mean, he even said almost it may have been unintentional.
Yeah.
But delaying that war for another year was a big part of the reason why they were able to at least get through it.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you see it a little more colorful than what we normally look at. Name of the book, Munich. Pat Gray from Pat Gray Unleashed. What's on your mind today, Pat?
The president's health. Did you see the press conference yesterday?
I did.
It started about 2:45, ended 3.5 minutes ago. I could not believe the grilling that guy got. First of all, he said some stupid things, right? I mean, the guy's completely healthy, is in excellent health, but he's obese, and there's a potential for heart disease. I don't know. It's problematic to me. I don't know. But the questions went on and on. The dumbest.
How many times does he eat at McDonald's? Does he ever order a hot apple pie for dessert? What do you mean he doesn't exercise? Our last president was a Greek god. Could have played in the NBA or the Pro Golfers Tour. This guy does nothing.
90% of us do nothing. When was the last time you exercised?
I refuse to exercise.
I don't do it.
I believe the last time I really exercised was, what day is it?
It is Tuesday.
1992.
And the day was important to us.
I think it was a Tuesday in 1992.
Would also point out it's Wednesday.
You're right. You're right.
I don't know. Did you pass the cognitive test?
Is it already?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
Wednesday,
yeah. See, I need the cognitive test, I guess, because I don't even know what day it is anymore. But the questions were amazing. And they wouldn't accept the fact that he doesn't have dementia. Because they deemed that he does a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so they just kept going.
I thought that was really smart of the president to take that test.
So did I.
It's obvious that no one really took it seriously. Because
now, you took the exact same one.
Today?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I didn't pass.
It's an example of this test. Yeah. And it's called the Montreal Cognitive Assessment.
Right.
It's not like a...
My guess is it's not the hardest cognitive test available.
No, I've had dementia. You know,
I know you've had some serious ones.
I've gone to Columbia and also had one at the Mayo Clinic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were, you know, at the time we were worried about the early onset of I can't remember it.
Wow. This is
Alzheimer's.
Showing it's happening.
Yeah. And so the test is, if you're really concerned... The test is intense.
Well, you want it to be challenging.
Yeah, and it takes an hour. It's not like this. This is like, hey, Terry Schiavo, you just woke up from a coma.
Yeah.
Is that a cow or an octopus?
I mean, it really is.
Let me give you a few of these here.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to show you three pictures. You have to tell me what these things are.
Okay. Tell me, what are those things?
Okay, that's a dog.
Oh no,
it's a lion.
Cat. Oh no,
oh, boy.
And a llama, aardvark.
I mean, you know, it's legitimately like a drawing of a lion.
Yeah, that's
you have to
too
know
easy.
That it's a lion. But some of them they can be a little bit more challenging. However,
and there's 30. He said there were 30, and he got 26.
I thought he got 30.
Did he get all 30?
I thought he got 30.
Oh, okay.
It's a point system. For example, you'd get, if you got all three of those pictures right, you'd get 3 points.
Okay.
So did you know it was a rhinoceros? Did you know it was a camel? Did you know it was a lion?
I actually get three.
Yeah, I know
did.
You did,
mm-hmm.
but
yeah.
You get all three of those.
Give him the math one. This is impossible.
Okay. Glenn thinks this is impossible.
No, ready? Ready? Well, I got to do it to him. Watch him. He's just going to sweat.
All right.
Take 100.
Take 100?
Minus 7.
Oh, my gosh. 42?
See?
42.
He couldn't do it either. Now they,
I got the
don't
first one.
Claim
I got,
you can do that.
I know. I,
you
no,
got
I
a
got,
calculator.
I've got
out.
A computer right here.
Yeah, I got I the know, first fair. One. I got. I think I got 94. No. And then he said subtract 7 again, and I'm like 81. I don't that, know.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, it is right.
So
it's
definitely right.
Right.
Well,
there's
passed.
No question.
Okay.
That's right.
So again, to get 3 points. The full score for that question, you'd have to get 100, then you'd have to get 93, 86, 79. Oh, if you go, and then I think you have to get to 72. Is it 4? Yeah, it's 4. You have to get 4 right. You have to get all the way to 72 to get. But again, these are not hard questions. By the way, there's 6 points of the 30 are available for these 6 questions. Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
What city are you in?
Now?
Yeah.
Question.
Pocatello, Idaho?
Nope.
What place are you in?
What
now,
place?
What does that mean? I don't know.
Like
is it,
building?
Okay.
I'm in an uncomfortable place right now.
That's a really introspective answer.
It really is. Thank you.
What day is it of the week?
I didn't know that one.
And you got that one wrong.
You actually are already failing.
Yeah, I didn't know. You know, what's the date? I don't know.
Date,
I was lucky to
year.
Get January.
No kidding.
Date, month, and
no
year
kidding.
Are the other three. So you get 6 points basically for knowing the basics about
your
surroundings.
You know what they don't ask him, which they should have because it would have been fun, is... Who's the president today?
Yeah. That's true. All right, I'm going to give you 5 words. Repeat them back to me. Okay. Repeat them after I've listed the 5. I will say the 5.
After you've listed all 5?
Then
all
you're going to have to repeat the 5.
Okay. I got tripped up on that part.
Yes, right. He had a lot of problems with this. Face, velvet, church, daisy, red.
Face, velvet, church, daisy, red. How'd I do?
Yeah, I did.
You got all of them right.
You got all of them right.
Wow. That was not three. I honestly got three.
For real?
I am really, it's weird. On these tests, I do, and it makes sense if you know me, I do really well visually. Yeah. I do really well in stories. Like they do, they'll tell you things and they'll tell you a long ass story that is just poorly written. I will tell you that. and then they say, tell it back to me and see how many things you miss. They'll say, you know, what color was the sweater? And the sweater had really nothing to do with the story. Mm-hmm. I'm good at stories. I'm good at the way I think. Mm-hmm. When it comes to just random words, I have a really difficult time.
Now, you correctly named those five words, which would give you on the test 0 points. Why? Because this is the real question. Now repeat those five words.
After all that time?
Mm-hmm. It's actually supposed to be 5 minutes.
That's kind of hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Face. Velvet, spoons, broccoli, tomato.
I think I got more than he did.
I think you got two for sure. You may have had the third one. Yeah. Now they have a suggestion.
I couldn't get all five.
That's bad.
To begin with, I got three, but 5 minutes later, I still had those three, baby.
Yeah, which is impressive.
So did Trump get them all?
Supposedly, he got a perfect score on the test.
Wow.
Now, again, there's a couple factors you could take into that. Mm-hmm. One, all this does is essentially prove that he is thinking like a human being, which is pretty obvious he is. He didn't have a stroke. But secondly, I think, too, like if you're prepared for it, you've probably seen example tests.
Oh, I don't.
You know, I'm sorry. Your staff is not letting you walk in there for the first cognitive test in the history of the presidency of the United States.
You don't think that's true?
Yeah, it might be. Might be true, but I think he's crazy.
I don't think he has dementia.
He doesn't have dementia.
No, he doesn't. But he knows the five, unlike what we did with Pat, who didn't know I was going to ask him again about the five questions.
Yeah.
He knows that, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Pat Gray Unleashed on the Blaze Radio and TV Network and on iTunes and Stitcher and stuff.
I want to talk to you about Goldline. Goldline is offering something if you just call right now. They have their New Year kickoff sale. They have special prices on things, discounted pricing on their most popular products. They're also offering a starter kit where you can buy one gold legal tender bar card and 60 silver rounds at the employee cost. I don't think they sold stuff to me at employee cost. Oh my gosh.
You got screwed.
Yeah. So anyway, you can get that special right now. But also, are they still offering the silver coin? I don't know if they are. This was a limited time. They still offering the half ounce silver? I'm not sure. You call them. If it's still available, great. If not, there's other things that are available at real good discounted prices. 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-465-3546. For those of us who bought gold, we're still sitting pretty. For those of us who also bought Bitcoin, not so much today. GOLDLINE, lasting value. 866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Tonight, TV, a show you do not want to miss. Politics, the future of the Democratic Party, according to those inside, and what's really happening with the alarms in Japan and Hawaii. Tonight, 5 o'clock, only on theblaze.com/TV.
Mercury.